We will see. I mean, what we propose is a clear-cut solution, accountable, transparent, European, if you will. We will see whether it's really interesting for most of the Ukrainian elite. I cannot promise anything. I can tell you just one thing, that until Tuesday last week, 6 days before the conference itself, it wasn't clear that the conference will take place or not. Because there were huge discussions on the Ukrainian side about the text, about who should go there, who should not, la 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 la. It was all agreed literally 6 days before the conference, finally, even though the conference itself was planned for months and months ahead. So I see clear fight inside Ukraine between different groups. And I cannot predict who will win.
Let me bring a second supplier here, Turkmenistan.
Thank you. I'm Jamalia Azleva, Turkmen Service. Mr. Ambassador, you mentioned Turkmenistan as a potential supplier for Europe and to extract gas from the newly founded fields in Turkmenistan. The country heavily depends on foreign investment. My question is, where does EU stand in negotiation with Turkmen government at this moment?
Well, our Prime Minister was there recently. We have Sacha Banka going there again in April. And we would very much like to see somebody from Turkmenistan at the summit on the Southern Corridor in May. The present policy of Turkmenistan is clear, and Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov said it clear a couple of times, that foreigners can invest offshore, but no one from abroad can invest onshore. There is one exception, which is China. And that policy sticks. I spoke with Eni, which is very interested in onshore, and everybody else is interested. I mean, the audit for Yelvan Osman field is tremendous. It seems there is plenty more gas than people thought. But the policy seems to be clear. Nobody is to get onshore. And if you want to try your luck in the Caspian Sea, here is your lot. So unless that change, no investment can come onshore, unless it's Chinese or Russian. That seems to be fixed for the moment.
Would it be the key issue at the summit with Turkmen side?
Look, we have no way of telling anyone you should do this with your natural resource or that. I mean, that's always the free choice of each single country. We do believe that the international oil and gas companies can actually do a more decent deal for Turkmenistan than some other helpers. But in the end, it's for Turkmen leadership to decide.
We have about 10 minutes, so let's take questions from Washington, please.
Richard Weitz, the Hudson Institute. I'd like to follow on to the previous question and flip it around and ask how the Central Asian countries, particularly those that supply energy to Europe, have been viewing the recent conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
Well, I've been to Kazakhstan recently and I'm going to Turkmenistan soon again. Those people usually, especially the people who are in the gas and oil business in those countries, understand very well how complex the relationship between Russia and Ukraine is. You know, how many people have their hands in the pie, both in Moscow and Kiev. And they usually just smile when I talk about it with them. And how do they see it? I think the real message for that region was August 2008. The real message to Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan was the war in Georgia. And the message was clear. If you bypass us, you might get hurt. And they understand. I was in Kazakhstan last year, a few weeks after the war, and it was just in time when Kazakhstan announced that it will pull out from three investments in Georgia, which it had planned. No official explanation, just simply, it wasn't economically interesting anymore. And Azerbaijan asked right in September after the war, suddenly to be able to ship oil via Makhachkala pipeline through Russia, pipeline which it didn't use since finishing of the Baku-Tbilisi-Jehan pipeline. So they also get the message. And we will see. Europe can offer decent terms, cooperation, not just in energy, but in transport and other fields. But of course, we have no divisions at our disposal and no fleets of bombard planes. So there is something that we don't have, obviously.
Let's take another question in Washington, please.
Or Roman, Keith, did you have any comment?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, did I
raise an issue here?
Well, I'd like to return just quickly to the issue of kind of a coalition, because I'm taking a look at the €5 billion energy infrastructure money, which is just being dispersed now. The only project in East Central Europe which is on there is a firm project, is a power line between Poland and Sweden. And the money that was originally designated for the Nabucco pipeline is shrinking or will go away. And so I go back to the point is that I don't think that the interests of East Central Europe, and in fact, are being adequately addressed in the EU Commission. If I look at the EU Commission, I look at what they've been doing as far as on pipeline issues over the last few years, they've been quite frankly very passive when it comes to pipeline issues. When was the first time that the Commissioner for Energy went to Azerbaijan to talk to the Azeris about Nabucco? Very recently. And when the President of the EU was in Azerbaijan, the Azerbaijanis at least report that he was not interested in the issue. So it's only been recent that there's been any interest at all. And there's been very little follow-up as far as White Stream. So quite frankly, I think that those countries who feel more pressed, not the Czech Republic, obviously, but those countries who feel more in a bind on energy and their dependence on Russia are I think, legitimately have a legitimate beef against the European Commission.
That's well, if I may on this one, I watched carefully what was going on with those money, because it was originally assigned in October to be 5 billion out of those 200 billion for the reconstruction, 5 billion for energy. And then the money constantly shrank, because then in December already it was just 4 billion, the 1 billion going to internet broadband. Then there was more money going to internet broadband and countryside. So in the end, what was agreed last week is 3.5 billion euros. And I can assure you that much of this money will not be spent, because as I said before, it would have to be spent this or next year, and most projects are not prepared for this. What I see as a more depressing thing is that the reason why the mixture of the projects in the end is such as you mentioned, and you're pretty right on that, Ambassador, is that what most EU new member states lack is the know-how how to deal in the corridors or in Brussels. How you get your things on the list, how you keep them there, how you get your projects 100%. Funded. That's something that the French and Italians and Germans know much better than we do. I mean, they've been at it for five decades now. We're just learning slowly how to do the stuff. So I am very often exasperated by our own state service, which could be much better, I believe. And I could be much better myself in getting the money to my country. And I see deficiencies on our side very clearly, because sometimes it really is that we are not just as good in grabbing attention and grabbing the money as others are. And that's our great, something we have to catch up with pretty fast. I have nothing more to say about that. When I see the list, it's clear. There are small projects there, a connection between Bulgaria and Greece is there. There are some other smaller projects there, but in the end of the day, we are pretty bad in grabbing the stuff which is on offer. We could do a much better job as new Europeans, if you will.
Martins, do you want to continue with questions?
We've got one more question, and then let's go to wrap up here.
Tomas Gulbinas, Lithuanian Embassy. Sorry, in DC. Well, thank you very much for the panelists here and in Prague for a very interesting discussion. Well, being here for a couple of years, I heard many times that Americans were kind of encouraging EU to take steps on energy independence and were caring more probably for European energy independence than the Europeans themselves. Now, with this deal on Monday between EU and Ukraine, it looks like EU made a very significant step, upsetting Russia, strongly upsetting Russia. And this comes in the middle of a honeymoon between Washington and Moscow. Looking forward to the EU-US summit, what will be your message to the Americans and what do you expect from Washington? Thank you.
Well, I was in DC a month ago, and I'm going there soon again. And I think pretty much everybody in the new administration is more worried about getting the clearance and confirmation than everything else. So we don't expect any new clear policies before the end of our presidency. And that's the usual stuff with all new administrations. When I was at the White House in February, everybody had a green badge, you know, awaiting confirmation, almost everybody there. And so we don't expect any major new policy formulated in the summit meeting in April. And also, I think that the US will have to do their reviews, which are plenty of them conducted at the moment. And we will see. We will also see how far the honeymoon, as you called it, the honeymoon with Russia, how far it goes. I think that there might be some honeymoon between Moscow and Washington at the moment, but I think there is more ground for a long-lasting love between Europe and the U.S. than U.S. and Russia. So we will see. But I don't expect anything new in April. No, it's too soon. It will be very polite. Very nice family photo and all that, but probably nothing major will happen here.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Washington. Thank you, Ambassador Smith. Thank you, Roman. And thank you, Ambassador Bratushka. It was a terrific discussion. I think we all learned a lot and all benefited from this an hour and a half that we spent together. Thank you.
Well, thank you.